Hello, you are listening to the Medical Freedom Show on WGXC Acra 90.7 FM. This is your host, Heather Martin. Today, I am joined by three chronic pain patients and activists. I'd like to welcome to the show Carol Banak, legacy pain patient of 25 years, Tamara Stewart, pain patient and activist, director of C50 Coalition of Advocacy Groups, and Kelly Thornton, legacy chronic pain patient, moderator for Chronic Pain News Source, and Virginia State Ambassador for the American Pain and Disability Foundation. Welcome, ladies. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank Kelly. You so much for being here. So I often ask my guests how they came into the medical advocacy and activist field. Does anyone want to share their stories to go first? Or should I start with mine?
We would love to hear your story, Heather.
Okay.
Would you like to start?
All right. Well, my regular listeners have surely heard this before, but I came into doing this radio show largely because my partner is a chronic pain patient, and I firsthand got to see the discrimination and the terrible abuse of people who need help with chronic pain because they are really discriminated against in our medical community. And also, I just kind of looked at, I tried to take a step back and look at the whole picture. And even myself, I have never felt comfortable going into a doctor's office or seeking medical help because of the complete sense of powerlessness that we really don't have any rights to treat ourselves. So we are dependent on the system. And very often there are egos and personalities involved, and it's very easy to find yourself in a situation where your healthcare is being held for some kind of ransom, like you have to agree with a doctor or do what they say or take a procedure or medicine that you don't want to take. And, you know, I look at people who want to have a choice when it comes to whether they're vaccinated or not, the whole pro-choice issue with abortion. And really, when you look at it, when you take Occam's razor to it, everybody wants to have the right of self-ownership and the right to make their own decisions about their own human body. So I did a little research into this concept that I had growing and found out that there was a founding father who was speaking about it early on, calling for a provision to be made for medical freedom. And that was really such a big oversight in the foundation of a free nation. And I think really another issue related to slavery, because that would open up the dialogue about self-ownership and who owns a human body, and not really a topic that the country wanted to get into at its foundation when it was so dependent on that system. So anyway, that's enough about me. I'd like to introduce each of you and let you share about your experiences. Who's ready to go next?
Carol.
Let's hear from Carol. Yes.
Hi, I'm Carol Banak. I'm 54, and I was born and raised in upstate New York. I got into an accident. My arm was crushed in the 90s, and that started my whole journey with chronic pain. It's been a long road, and all I can say is I didn't need any pain medicine per se until I was about 7 years into my journey. And things got bad with my spine as well. And then it was, you know, regular, and it was as directed for 19 years until last summer when I got to the end of my forced taper. It was a nightmare, and I'm lucky to be here, very lucky to still be here.
So you're, let's just rewind back, as I like to try to clarify for our listeners who might not have much experience with chronic pain. But you mentioned that you had been injured, you're living with pain, and then you're being tapered, which means that you're being taken off of your medicine. Your medicine is being reduced. Not everyone listening might know that terminology. But now why was your medicine being reduced?
Well, my nurse practitioner said that opioids are bad. They make the pain worse.
And was that your experience?
Right. She thought this was more than fibro, which I have RSD. I was diagnosed with in 96.
Mm-hmm.
So, it just seems to me this is all a progression of that. I do have fibro as well, which I was diagnosed in 06 with that in 2006. But,
So, in your opinion, though, how were you doing with the medicine? Was the medicine helping you? Was it increasing your pain? What were you experiencing?
It was helping. Mm-hmm. I was still walking every morning. And I took a little bit of CBD oil along mm-hmm. with it. And as she was tapering me, I started adding all this Tylenol. These mm-hmm. big doses of Tylenol arthritis, the 650 strength. Two of them three times a day, I mean, just to tolerate, and that was still with pain.
it's nearly common knowledge now how very dangerous for the liver that acetaminophen, the main ingredient in Tylenol, is, and it's certainly not a medicine that should be used for a prolonged treatment.
No, and they were saying it was fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're hearing a lot of this now, and Tylenol is being prescribed for people who are post-operative, when the body is very toxic, when the liver is under an extreme burden. That what's going on in the medical practice right now defies medical knowledge. It defies established, prudent medical knowledge, which states that you don't want to use Tylenol for an ongoing treatment for somebody who's got a chronic incurable pain condition.
It's infuriating.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
And you're just stuck. There's a brick wall. It really is. It's a total brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
And I this all happened in July, middle of August. I got to the very end and it was just horrible. I can't say a lot. There's a 4-year-old here, but I have, we are on the air. I have, I forgot my train of thought, but it was a nightmare, a complete nightmare. I never slept. It was horrible, and it didn't matter where you went or who you called. You were turned away. The hospital gave me Toradol. They sent me home with a sky-high blood pressure of 117 for my bottom number. I remember that well. But, I'm really lucky to still be here. I really am. And finally, to get back on my train of thought, I get on the computer. I just hit pain at the top of the Facebook search. And up came, all these groups. Mm-hmm. DPPR and
there's a lot of them.
News, and I met Kelly, and then things just started, looking better, and I had some friends telling me what I could maybe do to get through it, and so I was waited 5 months. I finally got some kratom, and at least it stopped all the crying and stuff like that. But I. If it wasn't for these guys, I don't know what would have happened to me. So I'm happy to be here today, real happy.
Carol, thank you for sharing my story or your story with me. I know that it's a painful thing to go through. We both experienced it and have seen it. And one of the reasons I do this radio show is because so many people out there are oblivious. They don't know what's going on. They don't know that legitimate chronic pain patients are being forced off of their medicine and the effects it's having on them, on their lives, and even on our society as a whole. And I just try to...
And now I'm 40 pounds heavier than I was in July. So congratulations. They made me healthier, didn't they?
Right. I mean, yeah, because uncontrolled pain has many other dire health consequences if left untreated. And now our medical establishment is moving towards just simply not treating it and to simply not even producing opioids or opiates at all. I think that's their end game goal. I really see this as being an extension of the drug war, and that what we are experiencing right now in terms of prescription pain medicine is directly related to the legalization of cannabis, because you have a law enforcement industry that has become completely dependent on that drug war. Financially, they get property seizures. There's a lot of money that rolls in from the arrests, from the property seized. Often they're very valuable properties. There's cars that are seized. There's homes and houses and RVs and just all kinds of things that go back into the law enforcement coffers. And with cannabis being really on a trajectory to be legalized nationwide, it's going to leave those systems to starve without fabricating a new drug war to take its place. And by eliminating legitimate pain medicine from the medical channels, they're going to create a new viable black market and drug underground to continue to target at the same level that they've been doing with cannabis. That's what I see. And that is my opinion of what this is really all about. Is because our prison systems and our law enforcement systems just cannot live without the revenue of arrests and seizing property from American citizens in the name of this drug war. And the only way out of it that I really see is to turn the tables around and completely legalize everything. And some people think that I'm at the wrong time in history to be suggesting this, or that it's just too far to go. But no, I really see that the iron is hot right now and just needs a bunch of striking, because we are on the precipice of legalizing cannabis nationwide. And well,
this Kelly chiming in some
yes,
states,
Kelly.
Especially in Colorado, you know, I mean, they're legalizing, you know, what we would prefer to, you know, in our party days or the younger days, mushrooms, psychedelics.
Legalizing, you meant to say, right?
Yes.
Making legal, yeah.
And they're finding, you know, these other sources that can help people. But the very odd thing about it is that they are never wanting to refer to them as helping people in pain. It's the same with ketamine. They were referring to it as something that could help pain patients. It immediately, within a few months, they backtracked that and turned it into a mental frame as to help people who have a mental disorder rather than people, then it can be helpful for people in chronic pain.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I have something to add on that. And
they've done that with a lot of these substances.
Yeah.
Except for the marijuana.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was in the state of Washington in 2013, and initially they had legalized the marijuana for medical use, and they had the dispensaries and everything. And then a couple months later, they legalized it across the board, recreational, everything goes. And when you went to the dispensaries, now a lot of these dispensaries were started by people who had a history with chronic illness or using cannabis medicinally and then had turned that into their business. But now when it was made recreationally legal, they were no longer allowed to talk about the health benefits of the cannabis. They could only talk about how high it would give you, get you, not that it would increase the appetite or relieve pain or reduce anxiety or anything like that.
And so now it's the complete opposite. They don't want to tell you that it's going to get you high, because now it's not supposed to get you high. It's supposed to relieve your pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I see such a dramatic difference when it comes to a chemical like the ketamine, the hallucinogenics. They're turning it into, it will help your mood, your mood disorders, depression, PTSD. But they won't refer that as helping anybody who has their pain. But if you go to a natural substance like marijuana, oh, it always has to be a natural substance that's going to help your chronic pain.
Mm-hmm.
There's no opioids, there's no ketamine, there's no hallucinogenics.
And the thing is that opioids are natural plant-based medicine. When we talk about,
I tell that to people all the time. It is a plant.
We're talking about the sap of the papaver somnifernum.
And they don't ever, people don't want to recognize that they put the flower up and they put the plant up and they put the leaf up with marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And they also do it with the magic mushroom. It's a mushroom. It grows. Okay. It is. It is all natural. It is still there. God still put the opioid plant, the opium plant, mm-hmm, on earth to relieve human suffering, and I will always believe that.
That's why I use the poppy flower in my Skype icon and my Facebook icon for this radio show. This radio show has a Facebook page at facebook.com/medicalfreedomradioshow. I always try to associate the flower with the medicine. I think that's something that we need to do more of.
And I agree with that. And I think it's because when you took a natural substance like the opium, and when the pharmaceutical company then turned it into a pill, people suddenly related it as, okay, it is now a money maker. It is now a chemical that has been created by a pharmacy,
right,
by the FDA, by the government. So it is now bad for you. It is no longer a natural substance, as they're going to look as marijuana.
Mm-hmm. Right. So people who say, get off that pain medicine and use natural medicine, they don't know what they're talking about.
It is still a natural medicine, but you can't just grow an opium plant in your backyard and just take it. You know, you can't just pop it off.
You can legally grow it. You can legally grow the plants, but if you are caught harvesting the sap, then you are in violation.
So you can grow it and look at it, but
right,
it's the same poppy seeds now. You know, they're trying to say, oh, it's going to be illegal. You know, they're trying to even attack people that want to, you know, the seeds for that people put on their bagels, for mm-hmm Christ's sake. All you gotta do is smoke marijuana, apparently, and your chronic pain will be relieved for the rest of your life, you know. And it's, but they're not remembering.
And it
the fact
doesn't
that,
work that way for everyone.
And no. It's the same with CBD oil. Mm-hmm. You know, it can help people, and some people get great benefits from it. But I'm a firm believer that, I have always been a firm believer, but that everybody has the right to access any form of relaxation that they need.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a pharmaceutical, if it is a natural substance that grows in their backyard, if they need to go outside and pull bark off their tree because that's what makes them feel better, then that is what they have the right to do.
Exactly. And if we don't have the right to do what we want with our own bodies, well, who do our bodies belong to?
Well, my body belongs to me. And, you know, and for many years, and this is Kelly, you know, I guess I will start with my story.
Okay, we're in the last 30 seconds of our first segment. I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. You are listening to the Medical Freedom Radio Show with Heather Martin. You're listening to WGXC Accra, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I have been talking today with three chronic pain patient activists, Carol Banak, legacy pain patient of 25 years, Kelly Thornton, legacy chronic pain patient and moderator for Chronic Pain News Source, and the Virginia State Ambassador for the American Pain and Disability Foundation. Thank you so much. Welcome back. You are listening to the Medical Freedom Radio Show with your host, Heather L. Martin. Today, I am joined by three chronic pain patients and activists. I'd like to welcome back to the show Carol Banak, legacy pain patient of 25 years, Tamara Stewart, pain patient and activist, director of C50, Coalition of Advocacy Groups in Oklahoma and nationwide, Kelly Thornton, legacy chronic pain patient, moderator for Chronic Pain News Source, Virginia State Ambassador for the American Pain and Disability Foundation. Now, Kelly, I know you were speaking in our last segment and I had to cut you off. I'm sorry, but I want to get back to you and pick up where we left off.
That's okay. Thank you for having me back.
Thank you so much for being here.
Okay. I am a 42-year-old mother of four. I live in a small town called Nathalie, Virginia. I'm a stay-at-home mother. I have been a stay-at-home mother for going on almost 15 years now. My chronic pain history, I guess, began back in 2011. I guess I say the major part of my chronic pain. I have had endometriosis and spinal problems and fibromyalgia for many years before that. But in 2011, I started to suffer severe back pain and hip pain. And I struggled with getting a diagnosis for that. I was prescribed, pain medication. And I only took two pain medications a day and as well as, something for my migraines. So I only took three medications a day. That was it. Two pills for my pain and one for my migraine.
Mm-hmm.
In 2015, my doctor committed suicide. And so that was kind of the turn for things for me. Finding a doctor to take over that care became almost right in the turn of the 2015-2016, the guidelines were coming out. I went to multiple doctors. I was trying to get referred to a rheumatologist. One of the main things that occurred to me is I went to my primary doctor, and he sat me down, and I ended up leaving that office in tears. I just wanted a referral to a rheumatologist, and he complained and told me that my history did not look good because I was going to the hospitals. But I was going to the hospitals because I had no one to treat me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had lost all of my medications, including my migraine medications. And at that time, I also lost my health insurance because it was at the time Obamacare was coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And I was now deemed as not making enough money to qualify for any help, but making too much money to qualify for state help.
Mm-hmm.
So my only choice was to go to the hospitals to try to get someone to... I needed a referral from a rheumatologist, but I couldn't get one.
Mm-hmm.
And... long story short, what ended up happening is I did make the choice at that time that my life, I did do a suicide attempt. But that night, I like to say that God saved me because the beam broke.
Mm.
And I said my goodbyes to my four children that night in their sleep. And I ended up going to I had a neurologist for my migraines, but they refused to treat anything else for me. And they had told me I needed to go to a methadone clinic the methadone clinic refused to treat me because I was a pain patient and I was not an addict.
So you go around and around.
Yeah, so the nurse there instructed me to go to the hospital. So I went to the hospital, and they put me in the hospital for 7 days for the suicide attempt. When I was in the hospital, they refused, of course, to address my pain. I was there for my pain.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the hospital with I was surrounded by people that were addicts, and it was a very difficult time for me. They wanted to put me on something called Lyrica, and I had instructed them. I guess I would rewind for a minute. When I was on the suicide attempt, when I was one of the hospital visits that I had gone, they had put me on Lyrica. And within the 3 days of being on Lyrica, I had had the suicide attempt. So I instructed them that, you know, you cannot put me back on this medication. But it was something that they were insisting on. Even though, you know, to me, I had it, you know, that was one of the side effects. But being in that center for 7 days, it was quite an awakening for me to be in there because they would not address my pain. Mm-hmm. But when I was in there, the people that were in there, they were young. And they were getting opioids for their addiction. They were getting hydrocodones. And they would try to sell them to me in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm. And they're creating a black market right there in a treatment center. Yeah,
but yet they still refuse mm-hmm. to do anything for my pain.
Because they won't treat all patients equally.
And here I was, you know, I was a 30, this was in 2015, so 2015, 2016. So eventually, I guess about the sixth day, they had a pain management doctor come and see me. And they said, okay, we're going to hook you up with pain management when you get out. So I got out, and the very day I got home, I got a letter in the mail. And it was from the pain clinic. And the pain clinic told me that they were dropping me from their clinic for not following guidelines for their clinic because I had tried to commit suicide. So here I am the very day I get out of the hospital, and the pain clinic that they referred me to is now dropping me for being in the hospital for trying to commit suicide. So my mother and we spent about $6,000 on acupuncture. I still went...
I just want to jump in here and just say that we often see these statistics about opioid overdoses, and I just want to mention that this number is so woefully skewed because many of the overdoses, many of the suicides are directly from the kind of scenario that you are describing, Kelly, that somebody is in chronic pain, they've been cut off from the only thing that has given them relief and quality of life, and they turn around to take their own lives.
Yes, it was. Now I have CRPS. CRPS from botched surgery. I've had ulnar surgeries in both of my elbows. The first one was a terrible disaster. It comes to find out I was only the second surgery that he had ever performed. For ulnar surgery, and it's a very delicate surgery, and if anyone would see the pictures, it is a complete nightmare what this had happened to me. So I ended up with CRPS. I also have psoriatic arthritis, and because it wasn't treated, because I was treated so poorly, no one would believe me because it started out in my nails. So everyone would say, well, you don't have scalies. I do not have psoriasis. I have psoriatic arthritis, and it would show up in my nails. And I went many years where I would wear gloves because I was so embarrassed of my fingernails. And one of the things about going to the hospitals is I would show people that I would show them my nails, and later on I'd get the report, and it would always state that her nails are beautiful, you know, and plump and pink. And I would always say how drastic it is that they ignore these signs from people mm-hmm. when they don't want to believe them. They don't want to believe that because you don't have the the exact sentence, because I didn't have psoriasis, that I would need to educate these people that because you don't have psoriasis doesn't mean that you cannot have psoriatic arthritis. So it was destroying my spine.
Yeah, that's why I'd like to see there be a provision made for medical freedom that gives people the same standing as a medical professional when they talk about their experiences and their bodies, because it's often the experience of someone who lives with a chronic illness that you're going around constantly having to explain your condition to these doctors who are woefully ignorant about it. And then at the same time, you're having to deal with their egos. And also, I think one of the reasons why there is such a big ego problem, like I feel like when I'm dealing with doctors, like I'm dealing with a very wounded ego. And that's not something I should be having to worry about when I'm worrying about my health, but it is. And, we mentioned also the doctor who committed suicide. The environment for doctors to practice in right now is very toxic. They are not able to do their jobs in our current situation.
Dr. Eliason was my doctor. I know I will say his name proudly because he was an amazing man. And it was a complete loss to the community. But I'll jump forward really quick to what really got me into doing what I do now, mm-hmm. which was January 17th of 2019. I was in a rollover and injected from my vehicle. And I was in the hospital for a month. I broke 4 vertebrae in my back. I sustained a substantial head injury and a brain injury, as well as partial paralysis on my left side. I had to learn to speak. I had to learn to walk. And when I was in the hospital, I tried to roll off of my bed because the nurse refused to treat my pain for the first 16 hours because she told me that she did not believe that opioids were appropriate and that they were bad. Mm-hmm. So I was literally laying on a stretcher still, strapped to my board, and I was literally, and I could not move, and I would see people walk past the door, and I would, with my eyes, I would beg them to try to find someone to help me. And I was in so much pain that my mind was telling me that it was okay if I could roll off of that bed, even if it meant being permanently paralyzed to get out of that hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the first 16 hours after being ejected from my vehicle. So the only answer to the hospital had was to send me to rehab immediately to be cared for, because the hospital did not want to treat my pain. So they knew that the rehab center was the place I had to go because they were the only place that could take care of my pain. So the rehab center did a wonderful job, but the rehab center was in fear because they were being told that within the next few weeks, they were going to have to stop treating their rehab patients with opioids. And the nurses didn't know how were they going to treat people. And these were people that are in dramatic car accidents, with windpipes crushed and legs crushed, that they were going to have to, how are they going to rehab people from these kind of injuries without pain medication?
Right.
So I don't know what that future holds for those people. So I was then sent home, and I spent 7 months in a brace, halo brace, from my neck to my waist, as well as casted from my knees, as well as in a walker, with home nurse care, 5 days a week, and I was only supplied with, it's hard to explain this, I was supplied with 2 prescriptions of a 30 count of 5 milligram hydrocodones for 7 months.
Wow.
So I survived on that. Now, I like to think that it changed me as a human because I was tortured. There were moments in my life during that time frame that I would talk to my children, where I couldn't sleep. I literally would not sleep. I could not eat. I could do nothing. My nurses would come to me, and my family members would have to come to me. And I was not in the same mind any longer, because no one would treat my pain. Because even after 3 months, being in that position still, being in completely haloed, embraced for the fractures in my spine, I was told that at 3 months, I was now considered chronic. So they would not treat my pain any longer. But there was no pain management that would take me. And then when I found that pain management, it wasn't until July, and they wanted to do injections into my broken spine.
Those non-FDA approved injections that are linked to the adhesive anachronitis.
With the brain injury, I also now, when you have a brain injury and a spinal injury, I now have something called heterotrophic ossification, where you have overgrowth of bones, where the bone growth goes out of whack in my hips. So I have extra bone that is like growing onto my hip bones. And I am still without any form of pain care whatsoever. And so it, you know, I, being in America, you know, having a rollover, I rolled over my vehicle about 5 times and I was ejected over 40 feet and I was tortured in America.
And that's the thing, you know, you think about these issues, if you're just a regular American going about your day to day, who hasn't had to deal with the hospital, hasn't had to deal with a chronic health issue, these issues are very far from your mind, but we're all just one accident away from being in a hospital, being tortured, possibly losing our lives, when the medicine, the treatment exists to save our lives. And that's the real tyranny here. And the travesty.
And I tried PT. They put me through PT. And the PTT, the physical therapist, could not continue. They disbanded me from physical therapy because it was too dangerous. And it was causing too much pain for me.
Yeah, I've noticed that there's a tendency now to put people into physical therapy before they've even had a diagnosis.
It was, they stopped it. They said they did not feel comfortable doing it any longer. So they tried to take me out of my full body brace, you know, from my head to my waist with no pain care and throw me into physical therapy. And my body went into complete shock.
Yeah.
And to complete loss of bowel, to complete loss of, the pain was almost worse than it was when I had the initial accident. And still, no one would say, I could not find a doctor that said, okay, how about we take this slower, or let's offer some form of pain care while you're in physical therapy so that we can then strengthen your body, you know, your abdominal muscles, your back muscles, your hip muscles, your back, all of those muscles that have been inactive. I have not twisted my back in 7 to 8 months. Yeah. But yet, let's throw you in there and do it with any pain care. My body was not going to do it. They didn't matter how much mental power I had. It is just humanly impossible. But they did not. They threw their hands up. And the thing about blood pressure now, it is another big thing with blood pressure. I'm just going to throw this out there really quick about blood pressure. I've mentioned it before. It seems to be acceptable now for chronic pain patients to go to hospitals and doctors to have sky-high blood pressure, and it's being completely ignored.
Yeah.
Well, if you're not a chronic pain patient and you go into the doctors and your blood pressure is 200 over 115, they freak out. But right now, they literally they're letting people leave, and they throw their hands up and say, oh, it's not so bad. And it's causing heart attacks and strokes.
It's causing death.
Being treated. It seems to be acceptable now if you're a chronic pain patient and you have a blood pressure that is sky high
Yes, and that is the we're near the end of our second segment. We have been talking with Kelly Thornton, Legacy Chronic Pain Patient Moderator for Chronic Pain News Source and a VA State Ambassador for the American Pain and Disability Foundation. Thank you very much, Kelly, for being on our show, and thank you to you, the listener, for tuning in. This is Heather Martin with Medical Freedom. Welcome back. You are listening to the Medical Freedom Show with Heather Martin on WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. Today, I am talking with three chronic pain patients and activists. I've been speaking with Carol Benack, Legacy Pain Patient of 25 years. Kelly Thornton, Legacy Chronic Pain Patient, Moderator for Chronic Pain News Source, and VA State Ambassador for the American Pain and Disability Foundation. Also with me today is Tamara Stewart, Pain Patient and Activist Director of C50 Coalition of Advocacy Groups in Oklahoma and nationwide. So welcome, everyone, for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Kelly, I want to just recap on what we were talking about in the last segment, and I also want to give Tamara a chance to speak today. And we were so Kelly, we were just talking about how the effects associated with chronic pain, like skyrocketing blood pressure, people who might not have been able to sleep in days because of the chronic pain, how all of these different life-threatening conditions are just being ignored right now in the opioid hysteria.
Yes.
So did you have anything else to add to that?
I think that, you know, this myth that, you know, chronic pain doesn't, you know, can't kill you. And I know that sounds like a drastic word, but it can,
and that's been known for many hundreds, if not thousands, of years.
They, you know, I don't like to, you know, I don't mind saying the word torture because
it's what it is.
You know, it's you know, any living being on this planet, any living creature doesn't want to feel pain.
Mm-hmm.
And there are creatures, animals of all sort of on this planet that will chew their arm off
yes.
if it means to relieve the pain from something.
Mm-hmm. And that the suicides we're hearing about that are being attributed to opioids are very often those people in chronic pain who have been told you're not getting any more medicine, and they take their last prescription home and end their lives. One thing I noticed when we were seeing all the headlines about the veteran suicides. And remember, there was a big skyrocketing of veteran suicides. And that was right when the VA canceled out any use of oral pain medicine. So you have a lot of soldiers who have been maintaining their quality of life through the use of pain medicine who are suddenly cut off of it. And that's why you have the big skyrocketing of suicides in veterans. It's not because they all have PTSD. Well, they might have PTSD, but they got it in their doctor's office on their last visit.
And I think a lot of the media doesn't understand that some of these veterans, I mean, they're in their 70s. You know, these are 70, 80-year-olds that have, you know, fought for our country and have lived their lives at home with their wives and their families. And suddenly, you know, this little source of pain relief that they've had for the last 20 or 30 years is ripped from them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they can't maintain their home, and they're not seeing their grandchildren anymore, and they're complete that ability to maintain their life where they're not relying on other people anymore. It's gone. You know, when you're talking about people in their 70s and 80s, you know, they don't want to have to call their neighbor to take care of something.
Right.
You know, they want to now live their life
mm-hmm.
the way they want to, They don't want to have to go to the doctors every month and pee in a cup and get treated as if they are a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody's taking away that one medication, that one little source that they didn't have to tell everybody about, it was their privacy. It's their private life.
Yeah.
And now someone is telling them, you can't have it anymore. And now they can't go for that walk. They can't walk their dog.
Mm-hmm.
Some can't
hold down that job. Yep.
That little side job, they're not painting anymore. They can't go out to their garden and pick their little peas that they grow every summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as far as they're concerned, they have no life left anymore.
Right.
You know, what are they here for? Because now they're in pain. All that terribleness starts creeping back into their body, into their joints.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not contributing anything anymore. And their body is now rippled in pain, and any living being does not want to be in pain. And torture is a crime all over this world.
Kelly, I'd like to try to give Tamara a chance to speak on our show. We're in the last 15 minutes of the show. Tamara, do you have anything you'd like to share with us?
First of all, I want to say thank you for having me on this show, and I am sitting here being very lucky, knowing how lucky I am that I am one of the few that still has some pain care, not my level before, but I do still have some pain care, and that is why I am still out there advocating every day, doing something to try to spread the word every day. I feel lucky, so I think that's where I can best use what gifts I am given. I completely agree that I often say we are now ignoring the last 100 years of medical science just to demonize one product while propping up another product, and it's all about money.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with clinical outcomes, patient care, nothing but lining the pockets of a few people.
Exactly.
It angers me to no end.
Me too. Tamara, you're the director of C50, the Coalition of Advocacy Groups. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
We're the Coalition of 50 State Advocacy Groups. We have one in every state. It is more of a working group than a support group or other. We get together and find ways to advocate, find ways to show up in front of our policymakers to make sure they know we're not going away, that we exist, that we're normal humans that however many weeks, months, years ago had a normal life. That's what happened to me is I was doing fine. I've had 2 cancer fights. Did fine, won both of my battles. The last one ended in October of 2017. Early 2018, they said, well, we need to get you off of the pain medication. And I said, but my 13 surgeries in the last 9 years, they still hurt. It hasn't quit yet, not to mention the fractures in my spine.
And the medicine was working.
Oh, yeah. I was doing great. Actually, through my second cancer, I had 2 foster children. We had a house in Arkansas on 13 acres. We had it right in the middle of the mountains and the streams and the rivers and the trees. It was beautiful. But I wasn't able to continue providing and helping and working with my husband because he's self-employed. So first we lost our house, then my car, and I'll tell you what made me the most angry. At the point where I realized I could no longer take care of my foster kids, when I was going to lose my foster kids of 6 years, I got angry. That's when I became what I call the accidental activist. Because I went, marched straight into the medical board, and I said, my doctor tells me you're no longer allowed to treat my pain. I would like to know why and what I have to do for him, for myself.
And that's kind of where this started for me.
Were they able to give you an answer to that?
Yes and no. They gave me a few general answers and started giving me information to take back to my doctor. They claim they did want us, our doctors, to treat pain here in Oklahoma.
Mm.
I was very leery of that at first because of all the stories and everything else I had heard. But here in Oklahoma, things are a little bit different. It doesn't seem to be our medical board. It seems like there's other, as far as I can tell, it's other things. We have other influences.
That's very interesting, and glad to hear that you got some traction by going there and speaking with your state representatives.
Absolutely. We were able to, we started with the medical board, went to the narcotics board, the opioid commission, then started going to the state capitol twice a week at least, met with every single state representative, state senator, the governor, anybody who worked in that building knows who I am pretty much. And so in 2019, we had two bills that we supported that we had some part of either writing or coming up with what we needed from that legislation that passed, and Oklahoma rolled most of its restrictive opioid prescribing rules back. It didn't change a whole lot. It did help for many patients, but the doctors were still scared. So we're working on Morgan this year. We're also working on 11 other states that hopefully we can do something with, and they should have either legislation of that will help them or an amendment to a current bill or something that's recently been put out, whether it's a policy or an agency policy or a state regulation. We're hoping to roll those back in those other 11 states. And I would love to find teams for every state because this is doable.
Yeah.
That is something that people need to know. It can work.
Is there currently a branch in New York or Massachusetts?
Yes.
Ah, good to know. I'd like to get that information from you because I'm very interested in looking into that. I've been trying to find people who might meet with me at the Capitol to try to raise some awareness about this issue or raise some lawmaker awareness about it.
That sounds wonderful. Anything I can do to help. We've got packets. We've got other members in every state that are wanting to help. We just need to find the right little, we call them dream teams. They work really well together. They click, they go in, they know what they're doing. And I will walk anybody through it to do exactly what we did last year.
Excellent.
It does work.
Do you have any links or resources that, and this is open to anyone here who wants to share some resources with our listeners, now that we're at the toward the end of our show or within the last 8 minutes now. So any links, any groups you'd like to share with our listeners who might want to dig in a little deeper and get more information?
Absolutely. On Facebook, we have the it's facebook.com/C50Advocacy. And we also have a website that is separate from C50. It is painwarriorsunite.com. I can put both links up on your Facebook page.
Yeah, the Facebook page for this radio show is facebook.com/medicalfreedomradioshow. And we'll have the link to this show when it's up in the podcast on that page. And our guests are welcome to leave their links there.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you, Heather.
The American Pain and Disability Foundation.
Okay. It's the American Pain and Disability Foundation.
Yep. Of course, we're on Facebook. It's usually, if you go to Facebook, you can type in the American Pain and Disability Foundation. It has links to our .org.
Okay.
And then Chronic Pain News Source, which is our Facebook page.
Chronic Pain News Source. I read that quite a bit.
Yes.
And share the articles profusely.
Yes. We are working on a Twitter. We have a new Twitter source. And I believe Tamara is working on something called Pain Nation. So that is that's another source that we will be providing for people that need information.
Pain Nation is not me, but that is part of the CPP news source. Sorry, I'm also a senior admin, but I'm not part of the Pain Nation. I am Fight Pain Daily.
Oh, Pain. Okay, I thought you were Pain Nation. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not sure who.
We're working on it still. We're in the process of creating things, so you know things are still in that process. So you know how it goes. Expansion is always a funny thing. So.
Well, it's a lot of work, and I'm very glad that the three of you are not only here on my show today, but just with us in the world and doing the things that you're doing. Thank you for persisting and living and all that you do.
Let me put a quick shout out to Red Lawhorn because he wanted to be on the show. But he was a little confused about, like, how. I was like, well, here's the phone number. And then I was sending him a call, and then he didn't answer. And then he was trying to get the link, and then he didn't get on the Skype right. And then so he's...
We can discuss that after the show.
Yeah, so I think that he could be a potential person next.
Always, we broadcast every second month. Well, we record, I should say. We record the second Monday of every month. So the Medical Freedom Show is a monthly radio show. So I will be back again next month, and I am open for a guest. So if anyone is interested in being on the show and talking to me about medical freedom, I'd be happy to hear from them.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. This is Kelly.
Yes, Kelly. Thank you so much. Thank you for being here and inviting your wonderful colleagues. It's been a lovely time speaking to the three of you. I don't often get to do a group show like this, so I think it's really fun. I enjoy listening to your different voices, your different stories, and just seeing how, you know, we all come together with this experience. It's very, very powerful, I would
think. Yes, I love everyone. I love all of you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners for listening. This is the Medical Freedom Radio Show with Heather Martin. You've been listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA, Catskill, Hudson. Listener-supported radio for open ears. That's why we are able to talk about subjects like this, because we are an independent, community-supported radio station. So it's listeners who contribute and support, listeners like you, that keep us on the air. So thank you to everyone. We still have 2 minutes left if anyone wants to add something.
Tamara. I don't think she'll hear Tamara.
Yes, I'm
here,
Tamara. I'm here.
All right. Well, it's
we
only...
can... the dog's got to pee.
Okay, so I guess we've covered everything that we're going to talk about today and about to sign off. Ladies, please stay on the line because I'll talk to you afterwards, and our radio listeners will talk to you next month. Thank you again for listening. Heather Martin, signing out.